It's amazing how quickly the weeks go when you're engaged in a study like this, and it seems like we just really started and got going on this 52-week study. Well, here we are, we're already to lesson 13, which begins on page 38 in your book. I appreciate, by the way, that Greg did lesson 12 last week as I was gone, and I appreciate that. Some of these are lessons that I think are challenging to get through in just a short little while. It seems like many times that there's so many additional comments that you'd like to make along the way, and we'll do that as we can and still be able to end the class in a reasonable length of time. Tonight on page 38, lesson 13, we're going to talk about ministry to the poor. And again, I hope that you've already put the time into looking at these references because we can't look all of them up. We're going to talk about these, and I've even got an additional bit of homework for you to do before next week that really was not covered in this lesson in any detail, but we definitely need to look further at it and consider what the Bible has to say. As we think about the ministry to the poor, God has always made provision and given instruction that individuals be taken care of. You agree with that? In the Old Testament, God made provision, gave commandments as to how individuals were to be cared for. And then this side of the cross, under the law of Christ, God has given us instruction as to how to carry out ministry to the poor. There's restrictions on what we can do, and we need to recognize those and recognize that God Himself recognizes a difference between what individuals are obligated to do and what the church collectively is obligated to do. So I want us to think about that as we go through this lesson, to think about the lesson that is being taught. And if you have questions along the way, you feel free to ask them. If you have comments, you can make those as well. But the lesson as far as taking care of the poor is something that Jesus has taught. When you think about Luke chapter 10, what's the teaching in Luke chapter 10? Yeah. There's some context behind that, right? It's the story of the Good Samaritan. But when you look at the context of it, what was being discussed? What led up to this teaching? I think it's interesting when you look at the teachings of Jesus, whether it's the parables or other teachings that He gave, to stop and ask the question, why was this being taught to begin with? Well, this is no exception to that. We need to ask the question, what was being asked to begin with? And so, what's the context of it, the immediate context? Yeah. You know, there's individuals who ask Jesus questions often, it seems, whose motive was really not pure. It wasn't from the standpoint of, we want to find out what truth is. We want to know what we ought to be doing. Many times it was to try to catch Him in something, to tempt Him. But this certain lawyer, verse 25, said, Master, what shall I do to inherit eternal life? Well, he went to the right source. He asked a good, noble question. But Jesus said, what's written in the law? How readest thou? What did he reply?
You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength, and with all your mind, and your neighbor as yourself.
Jesus said, you answered rightly. This do, and thou shalt live. But the text doesn't stop there. In an attempt to do what?
Justify
himself. Who is my neighbor? Now, we can't park here and spend a lot of time, But you may have individuals today ask you the question, well, okay, I'm to do what my neighbor asks myself, but really, who is my neighbor? Well, here's a good teaching as to who my neighbor is. The crux of what Jesus is teaching here is what?
Anybody you come in contact with.
Yeah. When you come in contact with someone who you have the ability and the opportunity to assist, to help, then you have the responsibility. I have the responsibility. And so it's not just limited to some geographical area, right? Those that are living to my left, right, front, or back. But those to whom I have opportunity to assist. And these individuals whom the Lord is talking about should have assisted. They knew what the law said because the first two that passed by that way, who were they? All right, now a priest and a Levite. You think they knew anything about the law? Should have, right?
The priest, he was over the weddings and get-togethers like that, and the other guy was over the Ten Commandments.
Okay. These are people who knew, should have known what to do, but they just kept on going. As you were, turned a blind eye, right? Passed by on the other side. But this Samaritan came along. And who were the Samaritans? Were they people who had fellowship with the Jews?
No.
No, right? Remember John chapter 4? The woman of Samaria, right? And so forth. And so they didn't. But the Samaritan helped. And he went above and beyond what most people perhaps would have done. He poured in oil and wine, put him on his own mode of transportation, took him to an inn, took care of him that day, and departed the next day and told the keeper of the inn, you take care of him. If there's anything more than what I've given, then I'll take care of that and repay you. So he went the extra mile. That's what the Lord is teaching, that we've got to have concern about others. Now, we've talked about evangelism, both by the church and then our individual responsibility and edification, as Greg taught last week, and now this ministry to the poor, sometimes referred to as what? Starts with a B. Yeah, benevolence. And so you have that the opportunity to do good to one in need. Galatians 6:10 says what? Yeah. As we have therefore opportunity, let us do good unto all men, especially unto those who are of the household of faith. And go ahead, Bernice.
I just want to make a comment. He was not talking about the church.
That's right.
He was talking about leaders and individuals. Yeah. It's
that's the context of that, which was my next question, which leads us into that. Is how? What was the context of Galatians chapter 6? That would be the book after, in the book of Ephesians. But you're right on. Yeah. The context of Galatians chapter 6 is to the individual. Don't miss that point. Brethren, if a man, and someone comes along and says, well, this is talking about a collective church action. What does he say? Does he say, brethren, if a church? Or does he say a man? Right, don't forget about that. You need to underscore that. Don't give anyone wiggle room on that point. Be overtaken in a fault, ye which are spiritual, restore such a one in the spirit of meekness, considering what? Thyself. Lest also be tempted. And so the context of Galatians chapter 6 is on an individual basis, not a collective action of the congregation. And that needs to be important, and that's part of what your assignment for next week is, but I'll give you that in just a moment, if someone would be so kind as to not let me forget that. See, those who should have been first to help passed him by. The priest and the Levite, right? Has there been times that perhaps we could have helped individually on our daily lives and out and about in the community, and we've been guilty of passing by on the other side? We could, I suppose, excuse ourselves. I'll say a lot about that. That's an upcoming sermon, but. To the point, there's all kinds of opportunity to assist other people as we have the ability and opportunity to do. This Samaritan, though, he was hated and despised by the Jews, had mercy and helped. He loved his neighbor. It goes back to the question, love thy neighbor as thyself. And so, do we really treat others the way that we treat ourselves? Right? We make sure we have food and clothes and so forth. Are we willing to do that to others? And so, again, the lesson is taught by the Lord as we have opportunity to do that. And then point two talks about the basis upon which such work is to be done. The motive for it. Why we engage in that anyway. I've made the comment from this pulpit several times. That being a Christian is not a self-centered lifestyle. I suppose we could make it all about self, but not if we're going to be pleasing to the Lord. And so we've got to at least have concern about other people. And there's a lot of passages that deal with that and talk about that. But on the basis of self-consecration, your book talks about. What is that passage discussing in 2 Corinthians 8? 3-5, and how is this talking about? Self-consecration, because you're not going to find that word in that particular passage, at least not in this version anyway. 2 Corinthians 8, 3-5. Look at verse 5. This they did. Did what? Okay. Not as we hope, but first gave their own selves to the Lord and unto us by the will of God. In verse 5, when he says, and this they did, points you back to what he's talking about in verse 4. Praying us with much entreaty that we would receive the gift and take upon us the fellowship of the ministering to the saints. And then he talks about how they first gave themselves unto the Lord. In fact, one of your questions is that who our minds have to be fixated on who? Centered on who? On the Lord, right? Following the Lord and what He would have us to do. And so we've got a purpose that first we're going to give ourselves to the Lord. If we don't first give ourselves to the Lord, why would we care about other people? In fact, I think there's a verse that deals with that. Help me out on where that is. If we won't love our brother whom we have seen, what's the rest of that? Good for you. And so, we've got to first give ourselves to the Lord. Be interested in doing what God would have us to be doing. On the basis of love. And the Bible, we know, recognizes, says a lot about love. Verse 8 of 2 Corinthians 8, I speak not by commandment, but by occasion of the forwardness of others. And to prove the... Prove what? Sincerity of your love. Well, that's interesting that it would say to prove the sincerity of your love. Has someone ever told you before, don't say it, I want you to prove it. Right? We might teach our children as occasion arises. Okay, I know you're saying sorry. I appreciate the fact that you're apologizing. But I want you to prove to me that you mean that. I want you to show me that what you're saying is actually what you're meaning. Right? And that you feel that. Show me by your actions. Prove our love by our liberality and generosity. 2 Corinthians 8, verse 24. Wherefore show ye to them and before the churches the proof of your love and of our boasting on your behalf. Love indeed and truth. Remember that statement in 1 John 3, 17 and 18? Let us not love how? Here's a contrast he says. Don't let us love in Yeah, word or tongue. What was it? Yeah, but indeed and in truth. Well, we can say it perhaps all we want to, except our actions are demonstrating that. It's really just lip service. Now that goes both to other people and with God too. And we can sing all day long, "Oh, how I love Jesus." But Jesus said, "If you love me, keep my commandments." In fact, someone recently told me there is a workbook being put together on Bible expressions. Expressions of love, expressions of hospitality, expressions of faith, expressions of obedience. Just on and on and on the Bible talks about. Love in deed and truth. There's New Testament examples of individuals who had concern for others and they expressed it. Their actions demonstrated that.
I think that's where the Church of Christ falls short by not having a big congregation, because they will hardly call you, come visit you, or have nothing to do with you except your own son.
Okay.
Now this is the truth. I know because my wife lived over 7 years up there to have sick. There was hardly anyone ever stopped and said, "How's she doing?" Now I know that to be the fact. Well, there I had a heart attack down there, and there was about one or two women here at the church and men come see me.
Okay.
And I stayed in the hospital 7 days.
So is the work important that we do?
It is.
Well, sure it is. And so when we say that we need to edify and that we need to evangelize and that we need to carry out the things that God would have us to do, we need to put our actions where our mouth is, right? We need to carry through with that.
Yeah, there's something else I'd like to say. There, I was blind for 6 months and there wasn't no bus stop to bring me to church.
Okay.
I couldn't go to church. Yeah.
Okay.
Now, buddy, that's not short, much good love
okay.
for you, brother.
And anymore, they have telephones, and that phone line works both ways, right?
Good.
Gratitude. We need to move on. Gratitude. 1 John 3, and then verse 16. Someone read that for us. 1 John 3:16.
By this we know we have love, that He laid down His life for us. We ought to lay down our lives for the brothers.
Yeah, He had love for us, and what's the reciprocal thing to do? Yeah. Now that's a pretty tall order. That's pretty easy to say. But do we love the brethren enough to do that? Right? If we love the way that we ought to, we're not going to have a problem with that. The point of this lesson and why this is in our 13th lesson is because this is the basis as to why we do that work. Because of self-consecration, we purpose to do that because of love and because of gratitude for what Jesus and God has done for us. Also, on the basis of sympathy. Someone read for us 1 Corinthians 12:25-26.
In the body, but that the members should have the same care for one another. And if one member suffers, all the members suffer with it. Or if one member is honored, all the members rejoice with it.
Okay. Let there be no what in the body?
Division.
Yeah. Some verses say division. Some say schism. Right? And we understand and know that division is condemned and unity is not just promoted, but is commanded that we have the same care one for another. Now define that for me and tell me what he's talking about when he says the same care one for another. What would that look like? Yeah, okay, we know what that says. Right? We all speak English, but what does that look like?
Don't count anybody more worthy than anyone else.
Yeah.
Everybody's equally.
Yeah, so what Paul is willing to do for Rose, and if I'm in a similar situation, he would have the like mind to do it to me. And we ought to have that. I understand we live busy lives. We know that. I understand you're not going to get around to everyone that has a cough, a sneeze, and a runny nose. That's just not going to happen usually. But we have the same care. We try to do the same things one for another. And so the basis upon which we do it is self-consecration, love, gratitude, sympathy, and to glorify God, 2 Corinthians 9, 12 and 15. That everything that we do is to bring glory to God. Right? For the administration of this service not only supplieth the want of the saints, but is abundant also by many thanksgivings unto God. While by the experiment of this ministration, they glorify God. Glorify God for your professed subjection of the gospel of Christ and for your liberal distribution unto them and unto all men. I'm not going to move it past this reference without asking you, what's the context of this chapter? What ministering is he talking about in 2 Corinthians chapter 9, of which many today just absolutely for one reason or another will not look at? Say it again nice and loud for us, Bernice. That's what the very first verse says. That sets the context for the rest of the chapter. Right? Ministering to the saints. And so all that we do is to glorify God, whether in life or death, that God would receive glory for all that we do. Then F, to keep our hearts centered on God. 1 Timothy chapter 6, 17 through 19. Have some time if you want to turn and read that passage. What's Paul writing to Timothy and stating to him? 1 Timothy 6. It's not about those that are rich in the world, right? Be not high-minded nor trust in uncertain riches, but in the living God who giveth us richly all things to enjoy, that they do good, that they be rich in good works, ready to distribute, willing to communicate, right? Don't trust in those things he's saying. Laying up in store for themselves a good foundation against the time to come, that they may lay hold on eternal life. Keep our hearts centered on God, not on riches, but on God. For where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. Where's that at? Matthew chapter 6. Check me on that. That's not where it is. Don't let me by with it. 19 through 21. And so that's the reason why we do those things. Jesus taught it. Jesus lived it. And here's why we're to do it. Number 3. Any thoughts about that? Any comments about that section of your lesson before we move on? Number 3, a part of the mission of the early church. Was the early church engaged in being concerned about destitute Christians? Sure they were. Romans 12, 13 and these other passages talk about what they were to do. Individually they were concerned. Collectively, they were concerned about others. Distributing to the necessity of saints. Giving to hospitality. Ephesians 4:12. Under the work of ministering. A part. We think about when the church first began in Acts what chapter? Acts chapter 2. They had all things common. Neither was there any among them that lacked. By the way, it was never God's intent for the church to eliminate or to eradicate world poverty. Never. We can't do that. We know that. But that was never, and God knows that. And so it was never in His purpose for us to do that. The New Testament plan of operation performing this ministry. Remember Dorcas of Acts chapter 9? Dorcas was full of what? Good deeds. Or the King James Version, I think, used the word alms deeds, which she did. Full of good works and alms deeds, which she did. Came to pass in those days, verse 37, that she was sick and died, whom when they had washed, they laid her in an upper chamber. For as much as Lydda was nigh to Joppa, and the disciples had heard that Peter was there, they sent unto him two men, desiring him that he would not delay to come to them. Then Peter arose and went with them. When he was come, they brought him into the upper chamber, and all the widows stood by him weeping and showing him what? Yeah, the garments. Things that she had made. The coats and the garments that she had made while she was with them. Can you think about people among us that have made things and given them to others? I can. I think about bonnets or boggins or blankets or whatever the case may have been, well, clothes and things that so many of you ladies are good in putting together, and you've labored with your own hands and you took those things and gave them. And so several of you come to my mind as I think about Dorcas. More congregations need more Dorcases among them, right? That will work and labor. And so there we have an example of an individual who expressed concern for others, right? Congregational. In Acts chapter 11, verses 29 and 30, what do we read in that chapter? What happened? Yeah. Someone by the name of Agabus stood up, signified that there should be what? Yeah, that there would come to pass a famine throughout all the world, which came to pass in the days of Claudius Caesar. Well, how did the disciples take care of that?
According to their
ability, right? Determined to send relief unto the brethren which dwelt in Judea, which also they did, and sent it to the elders by the hands of Barnabas and Saul. And we could stop there and probably spend the next 2 weeks on, or longer, a whole quarter perhaps, on that passage. Something comes up in another area. Is the church authorized to assist those brethren? Sick or not? Yes, we'd be authorized. How would that be carried out? Same way that they did here. And so suppose that a similar situation happened and Mill Street said, "Oh, we're going to send some assistance." Brethren gave as they could. How was that done?
They collected it up on the first day of the week.
Okay,
but and they would send it with other men.
Okay,
but
but in this particular passage, what did they do? If we were just looking at this passage, okay, he didn't say that they sent it to some middleman, to some institution, to some supporting church who would then oversee the fund. That's not what he said. There was a need. The brethren sent directly to those men. Now, not what the text says. That's what it says. So we can do that and know that we meet the Lord's approval if we do it according to that pattern, which goes back to your assignment for next week, that the New Testament lays down for us. Yes, we can sin to assist brethren in another locality. But we need to make sure that the way in which we do it is scriptural. You agree with that? We have unity on that topic? Any other thoughts? I won't say. Okay.
If any of the brothers and sisters need to read something, they need to start at Matthew 25:36 and read down to 46.
Okay.
And if this don't open your eyes,
yeah. Lord, when did we see Thee, right? And all these.
When did we see You do this? When You done it out of the least of my brethren, You done it to me.
That's right.
Now that's all you need to know.
That's right. Matthew 25, if you want to make note of that and read that in.
25:36-46.
In your time, right. Congregation. Congregational cooperation and caring for the needy saints. Well, the question would be, is it scriptural for more than one congregation to send assistance to those who need it? Okay, there's text. Would it be scriptural for those congregations for us to say, well, you just send them to Mill Street and we'll oversee that and make sure that it ends up going where it's going? No. See how simple that is? That's not what the pattern was. You sent it to them. Plan for raising these funds. 1 Corinthians 16:1-2. Contributed into a common treasury, lay by in store. Every first day of the week we do what? Lay by in store. So that we can do the things that God would have us to be doing. Right? I recall years ago that a preacher stood up and was preaching about 1 Corinthians 16:1-2 and about the treasury. And he said, now the way that this works is if there's $10 in there, then I'll use me in CL. $5 would be Donnie's and $5 would be CL's. Would that be right?
No.
Huh? Would it be all mine and none for him? No, that is whose? God's money, right? We give us God. Yeah, and it is to be used in accordance with the way that God says to do it. Do you believe it to be unscriptural then to use it in a way that would be contrary to God's instruction? Absolutely. Well, the flip side of that, would it be unscriptural to not use it when God says to use it? Yes. Same way. Cuts both ways. And so, contributed into a common treasury. Regularly, upon the first day of the week. That's how often we give, every first day of the week. What about Wednesday? We're going to pass the basket tonight? No, why not? The first day of the week.
Huh?
Yeah. Now someone says, well, you're saying I can't give in to help somebody. Well, suppose I leave the building here. Some person walks in and says, I need some assistance. Can I pull out my pocket and give them $5? Well, sure. Individual, each of you, let each one of you lay by him in store. As his prosper. Now, by the way, I need not have to try to break my neck to see what someone in front of me is trying to give or behind. It's none of my business. Right? It's none of my business. Proportionate. As you have been prospered. Okay? Out of the willingness, purpose, and confidence of the heart. 2 Corinthians 9:6-11. As you've prospered, as you've purposed in your heart, for God loveth a cheerful giver, not grudgingly. Yeah. I try and pull it out as you're putting it in. Right. Questions in the while the youngsters are coming down. How did Jesus emphasize caring for the poor? Okay, yeah, and he gave the teaching on the Good Samaritan, right? How is one to be neighborly? Okay, yeah, as you have opportunity and ability, those that you come in contact with. Remember, who is my neighbor? Name some things that should be done or should be the basis of caring for the needy. Second point we went over. Love, gratitude, sympathy. Yeah, all those. How is love always expressed? In action, indeed, right? To succeed in the ministry of the poor, on whom must our hearts be centered? The Lord, right? Give references that indicate that the early church has cared for the poor. Do you feel, by the way, have you filled all this in? I'm not going to come around and take a peek at your workbook. I don't know if I find one laying around, I might do that. Yeah. You need to fill these in. Tell how the early disciples cared for the poor. How did they do that? Dorcas, as an individual, cared for others. Give some examples of that. What plans were used in financing this work? 1 Corinthians 16, 1 and 2. And what's wrong with any other plan?
It's not commanded by God.
That's right. It's not commanded by God. It's not by His authority. And so forth and so on. Very quickly. Here's your assignment for next week, which is to accompany this lesson. But I want you to take this little chart, look these passages up, and I want you to just put a little check mark beside saint or sinner. I realize we're living in a time when so many, even among churches of Christ, among God's people, don't like that word sinner. And we try to make that a little bit more palatable, easy to swallow. But those who are Christian and those who are not a Christian, I want you to put a little check beside that, under which one that falls as to who received that assistance. Can you do that for next week? I'll leave these in the back and you can pick one up and mark it up and be ready to talk about that for next week. I appreciate your good attention.